Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Rule Persia, the podcast where we rate and review all the kings of Persia from Dayokis to Yazdegerd III. I'm Sariel and my pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Umberto and my pronouns are he, him. Hello everybody and welcome to episode 66, Hormizd II. Woo! Everybody's
Hooray!
Favorite Hormizd II.
Is
you
it?
You know him, you love
I don't
him,
know.
He is a guy.
I mean, sure, he is for sure a guy. Are you going to give me more context or like...
Well, eventually I will.
Mm.
It's been a while since we recorded last time, so how much do you remember of last episode?
Let me think. I remember the Barams. That was terrible.
Yes.
And I remember that... Oh my god, what's his name?
Narsé.
Finally made it to the throne. And then he did terribly...
Yes.
Like, he did fine and then terribly because the Romans beat us into the ground.
Yeah, pretty harsh.
And I guess one of the only good things he did was secure an heir. So this is who Hormizd is?
That's
named
it.
After
yes,
his Hormizd. Grandfather?
Named after, it's either his uncle or granduncle.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
We'll get into it, but, you know.
Yeah,
after
right,
the
right.
guy who was meant to be heir in the first place.
Yes.
And everybody liked and just died yeah. 1 year in.
Yeah. Oof. Mysteriously, you know.
Yes. Mysteriously and suspiciously.
Reed was assassinated.
So let's briefly recap what happened in Narsé's episode. So if you'll remember, during Narsé's episode, we went through a list of Barams who took the throne semi-legally.
Yeah, well,
Narsé then...
You know.
Took the throne... from King of Armenia, made himself King of Kings. He ruled reasonably well for a while,
yeah.
restoring royal power after the decay under the Barams.
We were so happy.
Everything was going reasonably well. He improved the economy, made things go better. He secured a stable succession. Then he went to war with the Romans to try and regain Armenia, or at least all of Armenia, since a bit of it was lost when he was only King of Armenia. He won an original victory, but then eventually was defeated terribly and had to give up all of Armenia, all the western conquests of Shapur I, and
yeah.
make sure that trade only happens through one Roman city called Nisibis. And then that's it. That is the end.
It was bad. It was bad.
For a guy whose legitimacy was, I can do things better than the Barams.
Yeah.
This was not great. Not
nope.
ideal. But as we mentioned, he did leave somebody, a son, in charge of the empire after him, so let's see how well he does. Do you have high hopes for Hormizd, Sariel, or do you think bit of
well,
a damp squib?
I don't know. Hope, like, yes? I mean, judging by what you just said at the beginning of the episode, I'd say yeah. But I think mostly I just hope that he does well because we are in a terrible spot right now, and he's not going to have an easy time.
No, this is definitely not the position you want to get in.
No.
There are worse crisis periods to come out of, but, you know.
Yeah, but it is a
ideal.
Crisis period,
yeah.
which is never good.
Okay, so, who is Hormizd? Where does he come from? Well, Hormizd is either the son or grandson of Narsé.
Oh, I see.
And we can assume he was named after the brother that Narsé and Shapur actually liked and wanted to succeed.
Mm. Yep.
That's good. We don't really have any details, but based on his age, it looks like he was born sometimes in the 260s at the end of Shapur's reign. So, in the good old days. Then afterwards, what does he do as a prince? Well, there's some suggestion that he was the Kushano-Sassanid king that fought the great civil war against Bahram II a few decades ago.
Okay.
So, that might be him, because their crowns are similar and...
Oh, I see. Hmm.
The Kushan king disappears at the same time that Hormizd becomes King of Kings. So that might be a thing. Also, the new Kushan King of Kings just calls himself Great Kushan King, which might indicate submission to the ruler in Ctesiphon. So that's possibly it. But this identification is disputed because, well, the rebellion was crushed under Bahram II, And well, you know, if you defeat a rebellion, you don't generally leave the chief rebel alive and in charge of a kingdom. You generally just execute him or at the very least banish him. So who knows? Although another thing in favor of Hormizd being the Kushan Sassanid king is that during his rebellion, Narseh had support from the Kushans.
Right, yes.
So it's his son was in charge there, but again, we don't really have any solid evidence. It's just that the crowns look similar, they have the same name, but it's the name of a god. It's not exactly an uncommon thing to have. So once Narseh comes to the throne, we don't really hear much about Hormizd. We just have a relief of Narseh with him, but it's unclear which person Hormizd is in the relief. Because there are two people. There's one behind Narseh with a crown that is shaped like a horse that we saw in Narseh's Face of Faces, if you remember.
Right, yeah, that was cool.
So that's one person. But Narseh also has a child at his feet. So that could be that the horse hat person is Narseh's son, and the child at his feet is his grandson, which is Hormizd. So it's unclear if Hormizd is grandson or actual son here.
I see.
It's a mystery.
So related, we don't know in which generation, but yeah.
Yeah, it depends. Because, you know, since he was Narseh's heir and Narseh was quite old, it would be a bit strange that he didn't have any older children. But it could be that maybe he did have a bunch of older children and they just died before him.
So, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, it's unlikely that Hormizd participated in Narseh's war with Rome, since nobody mentions him at the time. So it's probable that Hormizd was in charge of the eastern frontier as king of Sakistan, since Narseh was controlling Armenia personally, and the kingdom of Sakistan had become, under the Bahrams, the kingdom that the heir owns. So he was probably just guarding the eastern frontier.
Well, you know,
sure
kind of.
It was fine.
That the heir or the, well, maybe the next heir or maybe on the next one or, well, you know.
Yeah, pretty.
The
depending on
the bench.
What is legitimate, yes.
You will come to play later.
You will come eventually. So, okay. In 303, Narseh dies in humiliation after losing the war with the Romans, and Hormizd becomes King of Kings at last. And he took the interesting decision, I thought, of assuming a crown with a royal falcon supporting a pearl-studded globe, which is very similar to the crown that Bahram II had. So whether or not he fought against Bahram II, it's interesting he's not choosing to follow his father's footsteps in that iconography, but is going a bit further back.
Knowing how things went, though, I can see why. I can't believe that the Bahrams have become, like, the better option, but...
Yeah. Like, you could say, yes, the Bahrams lost a war with Rome, but not this badly, so...
Yeah.
You know, that would be a step up from where we are now.
Man, the people living in this period must have been so done.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the ones that remembered Shapur.
Yeah.
Just like, but we were doing so well. Everything was fine then.
But back in my time.
But yeah, so Hormizd started his reign, we're told, with justice but harshness. He was harsh but fair.
Okay.
Some sources even suggest that he restarted persecution of the Manichaeans, although we're not really sure if that's the case because Narseh had stopped persecution of the Manichaeans, so it would be weird that Hormizd would just like restart immediately. And a Christian chronicle tells us that Hormizd didn't really listen to the Magi and maybe the whole nobility. And he tried to be very independent in government and did not persecute any Christians.
I see.
So I assume it's reasonable that he didn't really persecute the Manichaeans, or if he did, it was very limited in scope. But all of this independence doesn't make Hormizd be very liked by the nobles.
Yep, I can imagine.
Because the nobles want to have as much power as possible. They don't like kings meddling. And, well, they'd gotten used to having a nice cushy job under the Bahrams where they could control a lot of things. And now this new branch of the dynasty is trying to bring things back on course. They're unhappy with that. And, yeah, it's also possible that Bahram himself was just trying to consolidate power and ensure that the king was more powerful as opposed to the nobles.
Yeah. Which,
this was a policy that Narseh had already started, but, you know, was robbed of legitimacy after he... Yeah. Miserably lost the war.
Yeah.
So So he is trying. He is trying to make sure that the nobles are staying alive.
Good.
However, it looks like the nobles didn't really go along with this plan. Because
I wonder why.
We're told that there was, if not a civil war, at least a pretty large rebellion in Caucasian Albania, where we don't have any documents from it, but the only proof is a relief of Hormizd where he is shown defeating a fully armored enemy with the symbol of the Viceroy of Albania.
Hmm.
So that's positive, I suppose, if he's defeating him.
Yeah.
And yeah, it tells us that he was successful because he tells us and had time to carve a relief of this. So presumably it means that it went well enough and the nobles were defeated despite this incursion. So the nobles aren't terribly happy with him, but he's able to keep a handle on all of this. And nothing is exploding yet, at the very least. But remaining the Caucasus, something very interesting had happened recently. Can you remember, Serial? There has been a big change in our favorite Caucasian nation.
Okay, let me think.
So, which is our favorite Caucasian nation to start with? It's always squished between Rome and us.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, well, is it Armenia?
Yes, it's Armenia.
Does it, is it a nation? I don't know what counts as a nation.
Yeah, I mean, nations are complicated words to define.
But yeah, that's why I was like.
It is a blob that is governed by a king. People live there.
Okay, thanks.
That is the definition we're using for now. But yeah, do you remember what happened in Armenia recently? There's been something that just happened last episode you may have forgotten because it was
the Romans,
not the main bit of it. The Romans are in charge.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, they have their own puppet king in charge. But yeah. This puppet king has taken a pretty radical decision.
Oh. Yeah, no, I don't remember. Like, I know something happened, but...
He has converted to Christianity.
Right. Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oof. Yeah.
Yes. So
things
big
are happening.
News, stuff happening. Yes. So this puts Armenia in a weird, awkward position.
Yeah, you don't say.
Because Christianity is illegal and persecuted in Roman territory. And in Iran, it's not persecuted, but it's not like they like Christians much. It's frowned upon. Try to cut down. So Hormizd has accepted that the Romans have their own king in Armenia. But maybe he can befriend this king and get Armenia to our side in a friendly way without having to actually fight a war, which, you know, presumably at this point we couldn't really win.
Yeah, no.
So to do that, Hormizd married his daughter to an Armenian prince.
Okay. I mean, at least they let him do that.
Yeah, so Hormizd married his daughter to an Armenian prince. And we're not sure how successful this was for his purposes. Because we have different camps in Armenia forming now, where there are a lot of the nobles that are friendly to the king and are pro-Roman, so more anti-Iranian, are converting to Christianity, because that's separating them from the Sassanids. While those nobles that are still interested in maybe holding a closer relationship with Hormizd and the Sassanids, they are maintaining their old, it's not exactly Zoroastrian religion, but a close
relative
of it.
That's so funny, because like they side with the Romans, but they're converted to Christianity, which is illegal in Rome.
Yeah, it's not so much a matter of Romans are friendly to Christianity, it's more a matter of this is more anti-Sassanid than pro-Roman.
I see, yes.
We will see. For those of you who are reading ahead, Constantine the Great exists.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a good move on the Armenian nobility's part.
I know,
but
you have mentioned him before, as if it's like a thing that's a common, so...
Yeah, Constantine is the end credits boss for the next few episodes.
Okay, amazing.
So Armenia is shifting away from Iran, not just politically now, but also culturally. So it's trying to establish its own more separate identity. So Hormizd is trying to tie it together by marrying his daughter to them. And he also decided to marry an Armenian princess.
Oh, I see.
So that's pretty good. And at the same time, he also decides to marry a Kushan princess, which might reflect...
We still have polygamy, right?
Yeah, you just have large amounts of kings. I mean, kings with large amounts of wives and concubines, because...
amounts of kings. Just all
yes,
the,
kings
all
with large amounts of kings. Because, you know, if you can make one political alliance with a marriage, why not make hundreds?
Right, yeah.
You know, it's limiting. Convenient. Why choose? Yeah, so he's having alliances with the Kushans in the east, try and make sure that bit of the empire is stable. He's generally just trying to ensure that the empire is in order and there's nothing off. While looking inside the empire, he continued the earlier policies of spreading agriculture, something which Narseh probably also did. He is particularly paying attention to the region of Khuzestan, which is just east of Mesopotamia. It's basically the bit of broadly Iran, which is just east of the mouth of the Tigris and the Euphrates. So it's there. It's a very fertile area. A lot of cities are being built there. Population is growing a lot in the empire, so that's nice. And this population growth is helping to populate the many cities that were founded by Ardashir and Shapur, which had originally begun as like small fortified cores, but now are actually becoming like real cities since it's been 50 years since their foundation. They're actually something that is an urban center with its own economy and its own life. But now we get to talk about a new people group, which we haven't discussed before, I think. We briefly talked about them during the Bahrams and Narseh, but now they're starting to become a lot more relevant. Because what is to the south of us, Zariel? What is to the south of the empire? We never look south.
Is Egypt coming back?
Egypt is a bit too far to the west for our tastes.
Right.
So what is directly south of Iran, Mesopotamia?
Let me picture a map. Is it... Sorry, it's taking me forever. My geography... It's been a long time since I've looked at a map. And Google doesn't want to show me one, apparently.
Google refuses very well.
Because we are here... Because India is way to the east. So
India is way to the east, yeah,
yeah.
It's just directly south.
So is it the region of... like Saudi Arabia and
Arabia.
This peninsula, like okay.
It is the entire peninsula of Arabia because turns out people.
I was picturing the right thing. I was just like, I don't know if my mental image is an accurate map, but I was like, yeah, to the east of the Red Sea and to the west of India.
Yes, that is
this part. But I was like, what? Yeah, okay.
Yes, and well, there's a bunch of people there who live there and are called Arabs because they live in Arabia. That's how language works.
You know, turns out.
Well, what are they doing? We haven't really talked about them often, but what happens is that they're generally nomadic or semi-nomadic people who live in more desert-like areas.
Desert-like areas?
Yes, desert-like areas. Live around cake. And what they do occasionally is that they raid the settled kingdoms that surround them and, you know, generally cause trouble, and it's something that Hormizd has decided he wants to deal with.
Cause trouble. What do you guys do? We just, you know, we appear just... in like every like fifth episode or so in a season, and we just like mess around a bit.
Yeah, exactly. When the writers aren't sure what to put in, it's like, let's put a raid in. It'll be fun. So yeah, Hormizd sends an army into Syria to demand tribute from an Arab tribe called the Ghassanids, which will appear for the next 500 years, at the very least.
Oh, I see.
And, well, the Ghassanids, who were close to the Roman border, they turn to the Romans for help, and they say, hey,
guys,
we'll stop raiding you if you stop assassins from attacking us. We saw you kick their butt really good last decade. How do you think it'll go? It looks like the Romans seem to be amenable. They want to add them as some sort of vassals, but it turns out that Hormizd is too quick for them. Because he kills the Ghassanid king and makes sure that no more raids. These are our vassals now. So that's good for him. That's lovely.
Damn, Hormizd doing the good work this season. Yeah.
And there is also some suggestion that Hormizd got really cocky and tried to attack Rome directly.
Ooh.
I say there's some suggestion because there's a Roman inscription saying that they defeated an invasion by the Persians. But the only other source that mentions this is A Life of Saints that was written a few hundred years later. So
Okay, so maybe not.
Yeah, if it's anything, it was only just a minor raid. Or maybe it was some Arab allies of Hormizd that maybe went a bit far in a raid. And the Romans said, yeah, they came from the east. Probably Persians, I suppose.
Probably Persians. Like, eh, who lives over there?
Don't know what they're speaking, so might be Persians, I guess. So if it happened, it didn't really happen that much.
It happened, no it didn't.
if it happened, no. Well, this is when Hormizd's conflict with the nobility comes back to bite him.
Well, right.
Because one day...
We couldn't have sunshine and rainbows, I guess.
Absolutely not.
I'm so tired of the nobility.
Yes, Serial, I am tired of the nobility and I'm researching the fifth to last episode. It will take a while.
They never go away!
No. A very big thing is going to make the nobility go away, and it's going to be entirely disassembling everything. So, yeah, that'll take a while. And even then, it's going to be questionable.
Yeah.
So what happens is that Hormizd is marching home with his army. I mean, not with his army, actually. He's left his army behind. He wanted to march ahead to get to the capital sooner. And he only has a few limited guards. He wants to travel light and travel quickly. And who should pop up from behind a hill if not a bunch of Arabs, furious that he had killed their king?
Oh. Did we?
Well, yeah, we did.
I guess,
kill their
right?
king.
Yeah.
We killed the Ghassan king.
Oops.
So, just before Hormizd was about to get to Ctesiphon, these Arab raiders fall upon his party, kill all his guards, and kill the king himself.
Oh no, heck.
Now, Serial, with our camera, we follow these Arab raiders. We follow them. They get into Ctesiphon through a hidden door. They have a chat with some nobles.
Oh no.
Some nobles hand over some cash.
No!
To these raiders.
Oh my god.
And the raiders go home, happy and rich, and the nobles get to choose a new king, because this one was kind of a nuisance, so... Best of luck, eh? It's a shame those pesky Arabs got to our king. Thank goodness the nobles are here to restore peace and order. That'll be fun, won't it?
I hate this.
Hormizd only has a teenage son, so I'm sure he'll listen to people who give him good advice. That'll be great, Serial. It'll be good times.
But Hormizd was doing well. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yes, this is exactly
like,
why we
literally...
can't have nice things. So yeah.
If it goes badly, it's because it's going badly. And if it goes well, it's because the nobles.
This is our first very obviously murdered Sassanid king. Hormizd the first was questionable. Hormizd the second is like, yeah, no, definitely. He was murdered. So yeah. Unfortunately, could have gone better. He did some good work, but...
Yeah, he was doing well. I was hopeful for him.
So yeah, thoughts, Serial.
I am mad. I'm mad. I'm just... No. No.
That is,
just,
yes.
I am so done with the nobles.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to an episode where we really deal with the nobles, but it's in a lot of episodes. I think I saw it's going to be a November or October episode.
So, yeah.
It'll be a while. But hey.
Sweet autumn. Know.
So yeah, are you ready to rate Hormizd, Serial, and see how he does compared to his father?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, let's go.
Okay. So our first category is final moments. How interesting was his death? Being murdered by either Arab raiders or people disguised as Arab raiders who were commissioned by the nobility to end
him.
Yeah,
probably that one. I mean, like, very annoying. But, like, that's cool, you know, at least we have the details. And we also know that it was an assassination.
Yeah, we know that it was an elaborate plot.
How do we know? Because you have described it really well with, like, oh, the camera pans over and we see this. But, like, historically, do we have the records of, like, the invoice to these
Arabs? No, historically, we
Arabs,
know that these Arabs were defeated and they were close to the Roman border. And Hormizd was close to Ctesiphon. So he was almost at the capital, so far away from where this Arab tribe lived, and close to the capital where all the nobles are.
Yeah. So people were like, yeah, this probably wasn't these
guys. Also he had angered the nobles, and the nobles were definitely going to take advantage of the situation, we're going to see afterwards. So while we're not 100% sure, it's likely that it was the nobles' fault, because it's kind of an unrealistic alibi. It's possible they just killed him during a hunting trip, or, you know, he was riding with a few guards and they just made sure that people who convincingly looked like Arab raiders killed him. Because that stops people from asking questions.
I hate it.
But yeah, that's not great. But I think it's a pretty cool death.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, I'm hovering around a 5. I'll need to see if I go plus or minus some numbers there.
I'll go for a 6. We haven't had like a cool story death in a while.
That's true. We haven't had a big good one in a bit.
And it is like confirmed assassination. So
yeah, it's pretty
good. Or like as confirmed as like historical records can be, right?
I think I'm going to match you with a 6, because I like the fact that there's an attempted misdirection from the murder. We don't get like super detailed scene or anything, but it's cool. It's a murder. It's flashy. It works well. So with a 6 and a 6, we get a 6 out of 10 for final moments. Our next category is battle hardness. How good was he at war and fighting? Well, as a prince, he doesn't really fight. We know that he, or at least he isn't mentioned fighting with his father Narseh during the Roman War, which I guess is a positive for him in this case.
Yeah, at least he had nothing to do with whatever that was.
He wasn't involved in the defeat. Good enough. Then the only real combat we have him in is fighting this Arab tribe, the Ghassanids, where he apparently conducts a quick campaign and defeats them. That goes well. He kills their king. Mission accomplished. They stop raiding for a while. So that goes pretty well. And then there's the possible raid in Roman territory, which may not have been him, may have been some overzealous mercenaries or subjects or whatever. But even if there was an attack, it didn't really escalate into a bigger war. It was very minor. It was just like a skirmish. So battle hardness, it's something. It's nothing crazy. It's okay. I'm thinking about it too, honestly. It's just like... You did something we know. Oh, no, actually, I forgot to mention. He suppressed that rebellion in Albania.
Yeah, true.
So that was pretty good.
That was the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, he suppressed the invasion in Albania. He defeated these Arabs. And maybe lost a small battle with the Romans, but nothing too significant. So, yeah, I think I'm going to pump mine up to a 3.
Yeah, I'll go with a 3 as
like,
well.
It's okay.
Like, we don't have that much...
No, it was mostly a peaceful reign. There was nothing.
Yeah, we don't have that much. Maybe he didn't have time to do that much, but like whatever he did was fine, you know.
Yeah, it was fine.
He's not going to be known for his military
prowess,
but
you know, he did his job as king. That was fair enough. So with a 3 and a 3, we get a 6 out of 20 for battle hardness. Our next category is scheminess. How good was he at plots and manipulations? Not really. The only thing we could give him is that if he was the Kushano Sassanid king that rebelled against Bahram II, he did manage to survive losing a rebellion and help his father gain the throne during his rebellion against Bahram III. That's only if we agree that him and the Kushano Sassanid...
Was he the same person?
We don't know. It's possible, but we have no definite proof. Yeah, overall, it doesn't look like he's a terribly schemey person. He seems to be fine, I guess. There's nothing much I can hear from. And while I do like the idea of him being the Kushano Sassanid Hormizd, I don't personally believe it. Because it just feels like if you're defeated in a rebellion, bad things will happen to you. You know, Bahram II won that war. Maybe he didn't win it really well and he had to compromise, but... It also feels strange that Hormizd, the son of Narseh, would be given such an important position while Narseh was there as well. So, meh. I think I'm going to go for a 0. How about you?
Yeah, me too. I don't know what I would put in here.
Fair.
So,
okay. Yeah. So with a 0 and a 0, he gets a 0 out of 20 for scheminess. Our next category is shock factor. How shocking was this man? He is the first Sassanid king to be killed.
Yeah. Assassinated.
All other ones either died naturally or were deposed, like Bahram III, so no longer kings when they died. But yeah, Hormizd is the first guy where publicly, even if you don't believe the assassination story, even if you think it was genuinely raiders,
he died as the king.
He died in battle as the king.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, notable. It's pretty shocking to see that. During his reign, he tried to limit the power of the nobles. We're told that he didn't listen to the Magi, that he was very independent and strong-headed. So that would have been relatively shocking there. And also, potentially a minor shocking, just a rounding up, is that he took a crown that was very similar to Bahram II's, which I don't know what message he was trying to give with that. You know, maybe the last decent king, but...
Odd choice.
Yeah, it was an odd choice. Wonder why, but there we are. It did also have iconography from the god of victory, who is called Bahram, so maybe he was going for that, but... Interesting choice, considering all the work his father went through to depose the Bahrams. I wouldn't have made the choice. I would have gone for something. Maybe go back to Shapur and try and imitate that. But who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not a king of kings. What am I going to do? So, a little bit of shocking, I would say, thinking around a two-ish. There's something there. It's nothing too outrageous overall.
What was shocking about him? There were no
moments. I'm thinking
moments.
One for the being murdered and one for the not listening to the nobles and magi. Yeah.
I don't know, because we have already taken that into consideration on, like, last moments.
Yeah, but I feel like this is an especially notable one since it's the first time it happens.
I see.
I mean, you don't need to count it if you don't want.
I don't know. I think I'll go in total with a one. I don't think he was a very shocking person.
No, not especially, but... Okay, so with a 2 and a 1, we get a 3 out of 20 for shock factor. Our next category is Aaron Shine. How good was he for the Empire in general and Iran in particular? He seemed to have been pretty good, actually.
Huh.
So we're told that he's centralizing royal power. That always helps. That's positive for the realm. You know, it's better than having nobles deal with everything.
Yep.
He suppresses a rebellion, which is always good for the stability of the Empire. He manages to stop some raiders at the border of the Empire, making sure that that area is more consolidated. We're told that he makes many investments into irrigation and agriculture, making sure that the population grows and the common people who just live there are flourishing. He makes sure that the old cities that were built up by Ardashir and Shapur are now actually becoming more actual urban centers. And overall, he keeps the Empire reasonably ordered. On the downside, he angers the nobles, so that's not great. He could have handled that better. And it ends up that he leaves the succession. It's not exactly an uncertain succession, but it's not a safe succession.
Now, fair, yeah.
You could argue that it wasn't his fault. He didn't plan to get murdered.
Yeah.
But also, he was murdered because he antagonized the nobles, so it's also a tiny bit his fault.
We're not victim blaming here. I'm sorry, but...
No, but it's like, how much can you blame Caesar for going to the Senate when people have been warning him about the Ides of March for weeks? It's like, well, I mean, I guess.
We're not victim blaming. This is just... It is what it is. He should have known that.
Yeah, it's like if you make enemies, policy, it's reasonable. That
if every policy that you're doing is like going against one of the powerful classes, you can expect retaliation. I'm not saying I agree, but like,
no, it's not a good thing. It's just a thing that happens.
Yeah,
but yeah, so Aaron Shine, I think overall he did a reasonably good job. He kept everything stable and improved the Empire a little bit. I'm thinking a 6. I think it's a strong 6, but I don't think it's worth a 7. Because he is improving things, but it's just like...
Yeah.
He's mostly maintaining the Empire and ensuring it gets a little bit better.
I think a 6 is very fair. Things were kind of difficult, and he started to take action to improve them.
Which, incidentally, is how much we gave Hormizd the First, so let's try and get a Hormizd streak going. But yeah, so with a 6 and a 6, we get a 12 out of 20 for Aaron Shine, which makes him tied for third as the best Sassanid king.
Well, you know, we've had a period.
We've had a tough time, which is kind of sad to hear.
Don't people like the Sassanids? I don't...
People like the Sassanids, yeah. Stuff happens.
Is this going to make sense at some point? Or
it's going to make sense. There's like... The ending is especially great. It's an explosive finale. I have like 2,000 pages I need to read. It's
okay,
a lot.
Then I'll be
waiting
for that.
Yeah. There's cool stuff. There's just a lull now after the big explosive foundation of the empire. Our next category is Face of Faces. What do you think this man looked like?
Well, give me
a
moment.
I'll send you his crown, which is a nice crown. Of course, as most things, it is, as most Hormizds, it's spelled in a different way as Hormazd. But, you know, that is a feature of the name.
We'll just
spelled
pretend.
In a million different ways. Trying to research anything about different names is complicated. Even worse when we get to the Khosrows, which are spelled with a CH or with a KH or with a, just a simple K. Does it end with a W, an ES, or an O? It's very confusing. Okay, so Cyril has finished their drawing. Let me pick it up and I will describe it to you all. Ooh, that's nice. I like it. Good, strong one. So we have our Hormizd. He is wearing our typical robes. He has a nice beard. It's a good typical beard we've come to expect. And on his head, he has a lovely crown, which has like a bird beak, bird's head in the front, and then some big wings jutting out the back, and a big globe on top of it. But we see that from behind, Hormizd is being stabbed with a sword by unclear people who will definitely not be the nobles or not be paid by the nobles or are not associated with nobles.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so here we have our poor Hormizd trying to do a good job, but then eventually being murdered for trying to do a good job, as often happens. So thank you, Cyril. If any of you want to see this lovely drawing, you can go on our Discord if you're patrons, or you can go in the episode notes down below, or on our website in Cyril's portrait gallery. And now let me show Cyril what he actually looked like. And today we have a coin.
Oh.
Because he does have a relief, but it's super eroded and you can't tell anything, so gone with coin.
I guess we somehow know that it's his relief.
I don't know how. I assume there's an inscription, but it is attributed to him for what I've seen.
I see. Well, let's see the coin. Yeah. It's a coin. It's nice. Cool stylization and stuff. But I've seen many like this. The crown is really cool.
It's a good crown. I do enjoy it. It's a good style.
Like a 2 for me, just because it's contemporary and like it's a nice coin.
Yeah, because he looks contemporary. He has the crown I described before. Big globe with pearls on it. He has a nice poof of hair in the back and it looks like he has this tiny little... It looks like it's in style having the beard with sort of like a ponytail with a poof at the end of it. That looks like it's going quite well. Looks like he has an earring or something. So that's interesting. But only a 2? I think it has enough character to be a 3. That's my thought.
Fair enough. For me, it's a 2, though. I'm kind of bored at this point with coins.
Sure. So, yeah, with a 3 and a 2, he gets a 1.3 out of 5 for Face of Faces. Our next category is lengthiness. How long do you think this man reigned?
Not long. Maybe 2 years?
He reigned for a bit more than that. Not an outrageous amount. He reigned for 6 years, from 303 to 309, which is a pretty good amount of time. It's not as much as his father got, but close enough. So if we take 6 years divided by 10, that's 0.6 out of 5 for lengthiness. And now, Sarah, before I give you the final score, can you guess how he's done compared to his father?
Well, the thing is, we don't necessarily only score on good things, right? So
yes.
In
spice.
I would say less, but like maybe not. Because his father got way less for like Aaron Shine, right?
Yeah.
But more for military, but also less for military because he also lost terribly. Less for the death, probably, because it was less interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so probably he scored better than his father, even though to me, his father was more interesting.
Yeah. Well, it looks like your decision in being bored by coins cinched it, because he got a 28.9 out of 100, which is 0.1 points behind his father.
Oh my god! So they're exactly... Okay.
They're basically there. Yeah, so how does this compare to other people? We get our first tie. He is tied with Alexander the First, Alexander Balas, and he is just under his father. So that's the position he's in. Hormizd is, you know, in the relatively prestigious 25 to 30 club, which is... You did a good job, but you weren't terribly remarkable. And yeah, that leads us to the final question, which is to say, do you think he is murdered enough? Do you think he's enemy-making enough? Do you think he is other things enough to be other a Shah things, Shah? You know. Or is he just a Shah Nah? I think, yes.
I don't see it. It's not that interesting, sadly.
Yeah, it's pretty much that it's... He does an okay job. There's just nothing to write home about. He doesn't have the same drama as his father does, and living under him seems to be pretty good. You know, things are improving, but it's nothing that you'll remember for eternity.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry, Hormizd. You will have to go off into the desert and meet Bahram the Third and tell him that, hey, guess what? Being overthrown and possibly killed isn't a thing. That only happens once, it happens a lot of times, and the nobles appear to enjoy it. So there we are. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode on Hormizd the Second, and we'll join us next time for Adur Narsé, his teenage son. Will he do well? Will things go horribly?
Well,
tune
we'll
in to find out.
The nobles are going to be, like, trying to control this one, so...
Yes. Will they manage? Do we have an Antiochus III situation where...
That would be cool. I was just thinking about that. I'm like, oh, I would love some rebelling. That would be great.
That'd be cool. Teenagers are known for rebelling. Will Adur Narsé be the same? We'll find out next time. In the meantime, if you'd like to support us, there are many ways to do that. You can support us on Patreon, where you gain access to a bunch of extra episodes. We just had the episode on Cartier come out, and next week we're going to have the episode on Mani, so if you want to know more about Manichaeism and their prophet, tune in, that'll be cool. We also have a bunch of other backup episodes on a series of topics around Iran, and you can contribute to vote to what the next series is going to be.
I think
if you have anything you're interested in, you can go for it. If instead you'd rather not support us monetarily, that's fine. We'd also just appreciate if you could give us a rating on your podcast app of choice so that people know we exist and can join us. And we can increase the amount of people who are obsessive about niche things, which is always fun.
Yeah, tell your friends. Bring them over.
Yes, and if you have already told your friends, I know who you are. Thanks.
We know who you are.
Yes.
Mostly because you've told us, you know. Yes. Which you can we are, do. We are very happy reachable online.
Yeah, in that case, without any further ado, we hope you have a lovely week, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.